If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts and live experiences about artists and topics you love. We'll be doing many live events this summer around the country, which will include artist interviews, contests, and more. Sign up for our newsletter at OSIRISpod.com to stay in the loop. Relics Magazine is a media partner of OSIRIS. For more, visit relics.com. The show starts now. You've been listening to a remake of Anonymous Skulls from Medeski, Martin, and Wood with Alarm Will Sound off the forthcoming record, Omnisphere. It's definitely something a little different for our audience, but certainly not for the MMW crew. Both John Medeski and Billy Martin are classically trained musicians who, while dabbling in the jazz music we've been accustomed to hearing from them, have always sought opportunities to work on more complex arrangements. Alarm Will Sound is a chamber orchestra that focuses on contemporary pieces. Since I'm not even close to an expert on classical or chamber music, we asked Billy Martin to come on the show and talk about the project since we're big MMW fans and give us an update on other MMW goings-on. Our conversation started, though, when I asked Billy how the whole project came together.
This project came together with Medeski's connections to a former, co-student, at New England Conservatory. I guess he went to school with not one of the musicians, well, I guess the booking agent, who at the time may have been when John went to school there, was a musician studying probably, and I don't remember his name.
Okay.
He originally was in touch with John about working with Alarm Will Sound and doing some live concerts, and perhaps working together to write some music and then present a couple of shows somewhere. And that's how it started. And then that was like a 2-year process of trying to find the right time for us to get together and just feel it out and rehearse. And then we met with about 4 or 5 musicians from Alarm Will Sound who are in the New York area, including Alan Pearson, the conductor. So we recorded and kind of videotaped our session in an apartment in somewhere around East Village, Soho area.
Mm-hmm.
We recorded some of that, and we tried various things, just kind of play together, improvise, and have some structure. But it started with John's connection to a booking agent who worked with Alarm Will Sound.
And then eventually the recording in February of 2015. I'm curious about chamber music. Obviously, you guys are all students of music. How did you decide that chamber music and classical music would be a good fit for kind of the music that you make?
Well, I mean, first of all, the three of us, Chris, John, and I, all appreciate chamber music, sonic music, we listen to it for inspiration and just for enjoyment together. And I grew up, my father was a violinist, so he was in the New York City Ballet, the Beaux-Arts String Quartet, New York City Opera. I was around that a lot, and then that music, and heard a lot of it and loved it. John was really he was kind of a young prodigy on piano. He was
right
at a crossroads, when he entered New England Conservatory, because he went in as a classical pianist and soon got turned around to jazz. Mm-hmm. And Chris, he didn't study classical, but he playing upright bass, obviously there's sort of classical techniques and you listen to that music. So we were eager, especially John and I were eager to work with a chamber group. We wanted to write and see what it was like to get that sound around us. The only other time he had done anything like this is with Heineken, I forget, the concert series that they had in New Jersey,
right,
way back in the late 90s. With David Campbell, who was Beck's father. He's sort of like the rock and roll conductor arranger.
Right, right.
And we did like a triple bill with Miché and Degacello and Medeski, Martin, Wood. So that was sort of, working with an orchestra then, but it was just really just playing our tunes as we play them, and they arranged it. this was different in that we had just a performance schedule, two performances that were booked way in advance, like a year and a half in advance at least, in Denver and Boulder. And they were just concerts. They were just going to play together and premiere some work. Right. But there wasn't any plan to record. That came later. We got a budget. We got some this executive producer, Michael Watt, who actually owns Ronnie Scott's in London.
Oh, wow.
And when we played Ronnie Scott's in London, just as Modestu Martin would, we got to meet Michael. And he took us out to lunch, and we just, you know, got to know each other. And Michael started to tell me a bit about his involvement with working with musicians and writers and orchestras. And he gave me some CDs, and then I asked him would he ever support something like that with us, and he said yes. And so we got a budget together, and he basically, you know, paid for the recording, which all fell together in a perfect timing to make this record. So it has a lot to do with Michael Watt, executive producer.
Very cool. I'm curious about the compositions, because they are eclectic, and they come from both members of AWS and obviously some of your own music that has been rewritten or recomposed for this project. Did you know, in the two sessions that you prepared for the recording, or in the session that you prepared for the recording and then the actual recording, how familiar were you with the material before you got in there? Is it something that you spent a lot of time with? I mean, these are long pieces of music that perhaps you had to spend a little more time with to prepare yourself for.
Yeah, it was a bit tight. I mean, we traveled to St. Louis, where they have a residency, where they have a space to rehearse different composers' music. So we had, I think we had a couple of days to go over the music with them. And that was literally a fly out, meet with them, work on the music, go home. And then I don't know what it was, another few weeks later, I'm not sure about that part. It may have been a few weeks or a month later. We flew and all met in Denver and had a sound check rehearsal. You know, pretty much a few hours of running through everything and then right up to the concert.
Right.
And then, you know, so we only had really a few days to go over all of this. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
They're very professional. They're great players. One thing about this music is that it's written out, and they're, what's great about Alarm Will Sound is that they not only read really well and train that way, they also are very familiar with working with extended techniques and improvising. So some of this music required that element of improvising, particularly mine. They had certain note choices, but, you know, there was a score, and it was conducted through. Other things are written through, like Caleb Burhan's piece or Peyton McDonald's piece. Medeski's piece was written through, but there were moments where they had a little more freedom, and especially Chris and I.
yeah, of course.
And some solos, you know, wherever there's solos. The Modestu Martin Wood material that was, they just arranged, they sort of meticulously arranged that to sound like the record, except that they were reproducing the sounds, you know. A lot of it came at it from like John's keyboard, you know. The original recording, he had samples of voices, and so they were able to sing those parts, which was really kind of fun and funny, you know. So there was humor involved. So each piece, you know, required some improvising, some not at all. So some of those things they could read through really quickly. Mine was a bit more conceptual, so we had to, you know, work on that for a while. John's is like 20-minute long piece.
Yeah.
So that had to be, you know, worked on. That was complex.
Your piece is Coral Sea, and I'm curious about writing the music. When you sit down to write a composition like Coral Sea, are you thinking about all of the different sounds, you know, Jason Price's parts or other members of the orchestra's parts? Or how does that all come together? I would imagine there's tons of things going on in your head, and it's probably a little bit different than an improv piece of music or something that you just jam out with the two other guys. It's more complex than that, right?
Well, it's a completely different headspace.
Right.
I mean, this actually came out of a piano improvisation that I had recorded. So really, I wasn't thinking about anything other than experimenting on the piano. I was sitting at my piano and I started finding some tonality and sort of phrasing that I liked, and I recorded myself playing, you know, a piece from beginning to end.
Right.
And then I actually recorded along another piano over that piano, and that is really what Coral Sea, how it was born. It was born out of an improvisation. It was basically like what we call spontaneous composition.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking of an orchestra. I just brought that to the table where Jason Price listened to it, transcribed it, and kind of laid it out in a way that they could take my work and have some freedom. I mean, I had a discussion with Jason about how we would approach it. And it wasn't literally note every little rhythm that I played. It would have been extremely complicated to do that. So we took the impressionistic approach. So my head wasn't in that. John's head was definitely in. I'm writing for an orchestra, specifically for an orchestra. Uh-huh. And he was really writing out for specific instruments. I wasn't, because I didn't know I was writing for an orchestra. It was something that I have a lot of things in my library, in my recordings, written down,
right,
that are just kind of there waiting for something, bring life to it, depending on the project. I have done some writing for chamber groups, but I usually know, oh, this is for brass, this is for strings. But I've never actually sat down and written and arranged anything for orchestra. It definitely helped to have Jason sort of take the recording of my piano piece and lay it out over the canvas of a score and go over it with me back and forth about what works and what might not. And so that was a very different process. Not that unusual, you know,
right.
But for me it was, you know, for me it was the first time having someone, you know, arrange my piece and have a really different interpretation of how I probably would have imagined it with an orchestra. But it turned out beautiful, and I'm the type of person that's very open to, you know, different ways of realizing something, you know.
In Kid Tao Mammal, which is the lead-off composition from the record, there's this huge Billy Martin drum solo. Was that in there too, or is that something again that you were able to improvise off of the score that was there for you for that?
Yeah, so that what was written into the score was just basically a solo cadenza. And actually, it's a duo with the other percussionist who had a drum set, who was very excited to play drums,
Peyton McDonald,
as well with me. So. Right. No, it wasn't Peyton,
no,
actually.
Wasn't.
It was it was this percussionist, Matt. I don't remember his full name. There's Matt and Chris were the two percussionists, and Matt was the drummer. So we had a great duo, and that was totally improvised. You know, that was just Peyton basically just wrote that piece and left that open as an open, you know, like a cadenza, just
right.
like okay, you guys just have a solo, and it'll be this kind of a certain amount of time. So that's how that worked. That's fun for me. That's always easy for me. I love to free solos and a duo with this the drummer who turned out really good.
The mark of good improv is being able to stick to some kind of, at least have the other players that you're playing with have some kind of idea where you're going. I mean, even improv in its truest form does need to have a roadmap, right? I mean, so the idea, the notion of having a roadmap to what you're playing isn't necessarily new, even though you are naturally all improvisers in what you do, right?
Well, no, you're not totally off. I mean, I think the roadmap is the score. I mean, the complete
right.
composition is what Peyton had mapped out, and
right.
a lot of it was written out meticulously. And he left part of this open to what he knows that I'm going to be able to achieve some kind of, you know, take it somewhere else that he couldn't possibly write out. But trusting me, he's a fan of mine and, like, you know, really loves my playing. So he knew whatever I was going to do was going to work. But when it comes to improvising, say, with the other drummer in that moment,
right,
we're really listening to each other. We're having a conversation. And I think that's what, you know, true improvisation, that mastery is really about to the moment, whether it's listening to someone else playing a conversation with them musically,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's listening to the room or listening to yourself and being in the moment, sort of shaping it. Like, you know, you're really spontaneously composing every time you improvise. So, and it's not always the same. There isn't a structure. You create a structure.
Yes.
You know, so it requires a bit of, you know, listening to what does this need right now? I mean, when after all this stuff happens in Peyton's composition, now all of a sudden it's like this drum solo where there's sort of just like a pedal tone under it. You sort of hear some tones from the orchestra and it creates a little mystery and suspense.
Yeah.
And that creates a certain feeling in the moment, you know, and you just kind of go with it. And that's something I'm really comfortable with and familiar with Vanessa Martin Wood. You know, there's times when they'll just drop out and leave me and let me go somewhere that they can't go. And that's what's great about it. It's sort of like takes you to another dimension, you know, which adds to the compositions. It's like it adds another chapter, you know, or another movement.
Is this a one-off project, or is this something that you think you guys, given the time, would want to do more of in terms of working with an orchestra and performing these types of compositions?
Well, I personally would like to work more this way with Modesty Martin Wood and an orchestra. I, you know, personally also do, you know, developing more composition for chamber music.
Mm-hmm.
And so John and I really, really have a really strong feeling about wanting to do that, whether it's with Modesty Martin Wood or without. But yes, we're leaving it open to possible return to working with this material, working with Alarmal Sound, working with another orchestra,
right,
that using some of this repertoire, and we have these arrangements, and you know, we're crossing our fingers that, you know, maybe we'll have something into next year, maybe in New York or somewhere else. Because of the release of the record, we're already getting a little bit of excitement.
Right.
And possible opportunities to make it work. You know, it's always the economical situation. Like, if we don't have anybody to underwrite, you know, the project, because we're talking about 25 musicians and
right.
we're talking, you know, probably a total of 30 people, like with crew and managers that need to be sound people and renting gear and paying all the musicians and traveling and putting them up. It's a very expensive prospect, as opposed to three guys showing up, you know, where they're going to draw an audience anyway, and then the overhead is not as much.
Right.
So that's the problem.
Yeah. And also,
but yes, we're open to it, but we really didn't know if it was going to be possible. But it's always up there for grabs for someone to do it. Even Michael Watt, the executive producer, had mentioned that he wanted to bring us to Europe at least for a couple of gigs, and he's probably will make it happen eventually if he can.
Right.
But that's something that he threw out there years ago.
Yeah, I would imagine, as a recording session, it's one thing, but to schlep around 25 people with all their gear and everything else is something totally, totally different, right? I mean, that's huge.
That's why orchestras don't really tour,
right?
You know, the soloists may tour and play with different groups, or the composer or conductor may work with orchestras presenting new material, but the orchestras are usually there in each city, you know,
right?
And they're funded to work to play other people's work. But Alarm Will Sound is a special case, and they're also flexible. There could be a 5-piece ensemble, or there could be a 25-piece ensemble.
Wow.
With Alarm Will Sound, they have that. You know, that flexibility to work with each. Their whole mission is to work with new music, new composers, and present new work. They don't present old. They don't play old work.
Right.
They present contemporary work that's been written specifically for them in general.
I would be remiss before I let you go if you don't let us in on whether or not there's an MMW record forthcoming, or I think Juice was probably the last with Scofield was probably the last MMW with Scofield record, but last MMW record. Is that something that's coming, something that you're thinking about, or is it you all have other projects now that you have to work on?
No, we have something we've recorded, almost a year ago now, I guess in October, was it September, October last year,
right?
2017, we set out to make a record and documentary for film producers.
Wow.
We're working on a documentary with us. And so we decided we were going to go to Mexico, in a remote place in Mexico, and record and make a studio record in a remote place, which would be, you know, really about, it was more for the documentary.
Right.
It turned out there was a big earthquake 2 days before, and then we ended up upstate New York, and we recorded for about 5 days. We were there for a week. They filmed a lot of it, and they have a lot of great footage, and we have a lot of incredible music that was all improvised and assembled, and kind of like, you know, we worked out a lot of new music is what we do best.
Right.
So that was all documented on film, as well as we have 4 days of recording. We have, you know, probably 20 hours of music. I would say we have 8 hours of incredible music. So we're working on releasing one record next year. That will be really, really incredible. It's going to be really great. It's going to be something that I think the essence of what Medeski Martin was, you know, we groove, we explore, like that
right.
kind of thing. Just
yeah.
the three of us, like we have such a big sound, just the three of us. Get us in the studio and just give us the time to just play and play and play and play for 8 hours a day, 5 hours a day, sometimes 8 hours a day.
Wow.
Well, I would say, you know, I would say on average it was like 4 to 8 hours a day. And we have amazing stuff. I'm so excited about it.
Really?
I have so much potential. So, yeah, it'll be sort of like, and I don't like to make references, but I would sort of say it's sort of like somewhere like those great early records like Combustication and Dropper and Friday
right.
Afternoon Universe wrapped into one.
Right. Well, that's... Yeah. That's what I grew up listening to, so that's awesome. I'm psyched.
Yeah. And it's all new, it's all fresh. There's no arrangements of other songs. We're playing, you know, we're just rewrote new music, you know, in the moment, what we do best, and stuff sounds amazing. The sound of it is amazing.
Wow.
You know, it's just really, I'm so excited. So that'll be a nice record that'll hopefully be in the spring, maybe. I don't know. But sometime next year, it's
cool.
Got to come out. We're working on, like, listening and mixing.
I guess when all of you are doing so many different projects, it's nice to get in a room together and, you know, play again together as the trio and work out all of the other things that you've been experimenting with and playing in other capacities, but together and sort of improvise back together. I mean, that's probably really refreshing after spending so much time together.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really... It was well overdue. It was a real nice, you know, almost like we were on vacation together, hanging out, just the three of us really getting back to our intimate selves, you know, isolated from the rest of the world, not no distractions.
Right.
We really were away from distraction. We were locked up in this place up on the mountainside and working on music and cool. Focusing on that. And it was great. Yeah, it was great for us to regroup and recharge. It's too far and few between now, but it's always sweet.
Hey, thanks for always experimenting and pushing the envelope, the sonic envelope. We do appreciate it, and thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope to get. I miss going up to Canada and playing for you folks, man. I miss it.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll see you down the road. Thanks a lot, Duke.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Bye, Ira.
Fascinating stuff from an incredibly talented and humble drummer and musician. Known for always pushing sonic boundaries, this project combines both the passion to make interesting music and the desire to work within an art form distant yet not foreign to MMW. For more information on MMW, visit MedeskiMartinAndWood.com. You can also check our MMW playlist at tsp.show/ecmmw or our MMW playlist on YouTube at youtube.com/thesoundpodcast. Here's another remake of a classic MMW song, End of the World Party, again with Alarm Will Sound. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.